UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
Was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we thought?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
Four calls
on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. Hope you're all doing okay. The first of two guests tonight is Evie, with a sighting of three UFOs in a very rural part of Switzerland during the 1980s. And then we have James, with some paranormal experiences to share with us tonight. Before we hear from our guests, let's do a quick shout out to everyone that has left a 5-star ratings and review on Apple Podcasts this week. And they are Maritime7, App Yourself, Chris Alien, and Astral Man 7. Thank you, guys. It helps the show out no end and makes the podcast more discoverable to future listeners and potential guests. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find the link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to the show, Evie.
Hello, Nick. Glad to be on your show.
And it's great to have you with us. And you're calling from the Indonesian island of Bali.
That is correct.
Now, your experience occurred in the 80s in Switzerland. Would you like to start at the beginning for our listeners, please, Evie?
Yes, sure. Like, it was a wooden farmhouse, like with two floors. We were upstairs outside smoking a cigarette. And it was getting night, like in summer, you know, the days are longer. And we saw over the forest, yeah, these three UFOs, triangular shape. I mean, yeah, I don't know what they were doing, like playing around or looking for something. I have no idea. They were flying like these weird formations. And that went on for, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes or so. And then they vanished. They flew off.
And this happened back in the 80s?
That was in the 80s, yeah. Like, I just started to smoke cigarettes, and because inside the house it always smells. So me and my friend, we sat outside, you know, and that's how we happened to see these three orange triangular shaped UFOs flying these crazy patterns over the forest. And that was like really no lasers at the time anywhere where we live. It's total was farmland at the time, you know, like and forest. So that was like, yeah, that was definitely UFOs and triangular shaped ones and orange, like orange in glow, like really, yeah, bright, you know.
Wow. Excellent.
Yeah. Like because, we were sitting out there. And of course, you look at the forest, and there they appeared, these three things, yeah, these triangular-shaped UFOs. And because my dad flies small planes, like, I know how planes fly, you know. I've flown a lot of small planes. I lived in Papua New Guinea before with my family also, and my dad's a pilot, and normal planes, they can't fly like that, like up and down and really zigzag like that. That's not possible, you know. Like, how they were flying was not possible for any aircraft here to fly. Not possible, you know.
What kind of size would you say these objects were?
I mean, that was maybe a couple of kilometers away, and I saw them quite clearly. I mean, and I don't have the best eyesight, and I could see them clearly. So they were maybe bigger than a chestnut, definitely. I mean, they were pretty, they were bigger than, I mean, clearly visible, like really, I mean, how far were we away? Maybe 3-4 kilometers. And I could see them very well. I mean, yeah, a bigger small plane.
Okay, so say like a chestnut with an outstretched arm, that kind of size.
Yeah, yeah.
And what kind of motion were they doing above the forest?
Yeah, like, I don't know if they were searching for something, like zigzag, and then they up, and then they went down again, like just patterns like a laser almost would make, you know, like some laser pointers. I don't know if they were like mocking around or looking for something or searching for something. I have no idea also. And my friend also not, like really no idea. But they were zooming like really so in these weird patterns how they were flying, you know, like, yeah, I don't know too how to... Maybe they were looking for something. I don't know. I really don't know. That would be speculation. Like,
sure. And you said orange in color. Was that like a light, like an orange light?
Yeah, like almost Ovaltine box shape. You know what the orange is like? A really like an orange like that. Like an Ovaltine, you know, the chocolate drink.
Ovaltine, sure. Okay.
Yeah, that orange. Like, about a dark, like a darkish orange, but like lit up.
And how long the whole event lasts for?
Maybe 5 minutes, more or less 5 minutes. Because we just went out, like lit our city, started looking at the forest, and suddenly my friend said, oh, look, what's that? You know, there's some light over there. And I'm like, what? And then we see them appear like three orange, triangular-shaped flying objects. And then we were like, yeah, during the cigarette, they were all cruising around, flying these, I don't know, patterns. And then they went, you know, and suddenly they vanished, like flew off, like gone, you know.
Did they all leave in the same direction?
All in the same direction and all at the same time.
Was it in a very slow speed or?
Yeah, they didn't like fly off fast. They just like went, but not like whoom and gone. Not like that. They just went.
So they could have been flying above the forest for obviously a lot longer before you'd seen them.
Totally could have been. Yes, could have been. Because we live at the bottom of the hill and then at the top of the hill, the forest started. And yeah. After a while, they would have been out of our sight, you know, because it went uphill after, you know, so I don't know, yeah. And they were flying on top of the forest up the hill.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. I wonder what it was and what they were up to.
Honestly, I have no idea. But yeah, because it's such a rural area, you know, but we do have like atomic power plants in Switzerland and one is not too far away from there. So who knows, maybe, I don't know too, you know, there's some connection sometimes, or I have no idea what they were doing, really no idea. But that's the only time I ever saw something like that, you know, and we sat often outside the window in summer before. Yeah, because it's nice and yeah, you have a nice view. But that's the only time I ever saw something like that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They always seem to do have an interest in nuclear facilities.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. What part of Switzerland was it?
In a canton is called Aargau. Aargau, Canton Aargau.
Okay. All right. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is, yeah. I mean, I have, since then, I've been fascinated with everything supernatural and UFO and whatever, you know. So, yeah, I'm very open-minded since that moment, yeah. And my friend, she's like now an Arabic professor, and she's very rational and very, and she's British also, very straight and everything. But, you know, she saw that too, not just me. So I was not alone to see it. You know, I was with someone, not that, yeah.
Yeah, that's always, it's always good. And, you know, you have a knowledge of aircrafts in any case. So, you know, this wasn't a plane.
Yes, yes, yes. My dad's a pilot. No, that was really unusual. It was fascinating. Yeah. I don't know what they were doing. Really no idea, because it's really just forest there. But if they were just playing, or I don't know, it looked almost playing, you know, like just mocking around, basically, it looked like, you know. But it could have been also looking for something. I don't know. That's all speculation, but, you know, otherwise.
Of course. I mean, I do get a lot of reports of lights, especially around dense forests, you know, all over.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm also a rational person and everything, but this could not be explained with any logic, or, yeah, really could not be explained.
And if one good thing came out of it, it's opened your mind.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely, for sure. Now, that was pretty mind-boggling because, yeah. And that in Switzerland, really in the village. You know, my village was called, translated, in front of the forest, is the name of the village. So really in the village, you know, and to see something like that, like really out of the blue, it was like, wow, you know.
And have you ever looked into any other reports from Switzerland?
Well, at that time, anyway, there was no internet. And after, I put it a bit on the back burner, but yeah, I could just, yeah, I could look into it now, but that was before internet or anything. So, yeah. So, no, I didn't know. I told my parents about it. They went upstairs, also looked out after, but of course they were gone at the time. Then by then, and yeah, and after, that was that, basically.
And it's great to have a report from Switzerland as well.
Oh, so I'm the first.
You are the first, yeah. I think I had a guest on from Denmark. So it's nice to get a few European sightings.
Well, in Australia, one time I saw something zooming like through the sky, but this, I was not sure if it was not a flying star, because it was like white and everything. And yeah, so there I can really not be sure. But those three triangular shaped orange ones, that was definitely an unidentified flying object, really, for sure, you know.
What is us? I'll look around, see if there's any reports of anything similar to this in Switzerland.
Yeah, yeah, please. I will also have a look, because I haven't really followed up after that, you know. So, but yeah, I could check out, but I'm not exactly sure. 83 or 84, or, you know, that I'm not totally sure anymore exactly what year, but the early 80s, it was really beginning of the 80s. So 82, 84, like between then. Yeah. But they were, yeah, normally what you saw in movies, they were like UFOs, they were all round and stuff. And those things, they were triangular shaped. So I've never heard in the 80s of a triangular shaped flying object, you know. So normally you were told they're flying saucers, they're disc shaped also. But those things, they were triangular shaped. So, yeah.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's was the normal logic. Then it was all flying saucers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, since doing this show, I've had several, ranging from the late 70s, or right up to now, of triangles, triangular shaped objects.
Yeah, yeah. What I've seen also in paranormal programs. So I mean, they've had triangular shaped ones, cylinder shaped ones. All kinds of shapes they come in, obviously. But those, what I've seen and my friend, they were triangular shaped.
Yeah, they certainly come in all shapes and sizes. A few weeks ago, I had a guy and it's in like a dumbbell shape.
Yeah. And TikTok, that was one that came out recently from the military, U.S. military. They released it, some TikTok-shaped one.
TikTok, that's right, yeah, yeah. Again, and a very different shape. But they, like I said, they come in all shapes and sizes.
Exactly, and underwater ones they have now also. So, yeah, I'm sure they're everywhere, you know, just we don't know yet, or I have no idea, you know.
Well, let's hope we find out.
I'm sure we will.
Great. I really appreciate you coming on today, Evie.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you, Nick. Have a good night now.
And you. And you enjoy the rest of your morning.
I will.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I'm really happy you can join us today, and you're calling from Reno, Nevada.
That's right. Calling from Reno, Nevada, for sure.
Great stuff. And you have three unexplained experiences that you would like to share with us today.
I do. Yeah. So the first experience, the first account that I'd like to relay took place in Denver, Colorado, around 1999. I was living in the basement of a house, and it was late at night. And I produce electronic music with some guys. And my room was down in the basement next to our studio. And it was probably, I don't know, maybe midnight or one in the morning. And I just heard this tone. It's like, And I'm thinking, man, who is in the studio making noise? Like, I'm sleeping. You know, this is rude. So I just tried to roll over and ignore it. And it just kept getting louder. Like, It started getting louder, more intense. And then pretty soon it started making a vibration like, boom, 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 boom. I'm like, okay, someone's going to break the speakers. And now I'm getting mad. So I get up out of bed. I throw my blankets aside. I open the door and I run around the corner to the studio. Everything is pitch black. And you know, typically if you had the synthesizers on, the mixers on, and the speakers, which are internally amplified, this is the part that really stupefied me. Like I ran into the studio and it's like one of those moments where you don't know what's happening. Like it doesn't make any sense. And it's like this intense vibration, like wah, 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 wah. And while it was vibrating, there was also a tone like below it. And it just kept getting louder and louder. And I'm like, our speakers are going to explode. Like something is going to break. And I didn't know what to do in it. And I'm looking around. And so I've had many studios in my life. And I've had big speakers that have an amplifier with speaker wire that go to them. And when the amp is on, I've been able to pick up other radio frequencies. I've heard like cops talking on their CBs driving by. But that was because of power grounding issues. And those kind of speakers were externally amplified. These had internal amps. So when you turn on the speaker, the amp is actually internally set in there. So the speakers were off. They didn't have their green lights on. The power was off on everything. I'm like, this is impossible. Like, how is this happening? It started to crescendo, get louder and louder. My roommates all came running down the stairs like, what the hell are you doing? They thought it was me. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. So then it started to decrease, like get quieter. So the crescendo, it happened, got up to a peak, and then started to decrease in its intensity. It honestly sounded like something was flying over the house. Like if I could say like it sounded like anything, I was like something with an intense magnetic field is slowly going overhead. So I pushed everybody out of the way and I ran up the stairs and I went out to the front door, you know, kicked the door open and there was nothing, of course, you know, and I'm looking around. There was some helicopters, but that was not unusual, you know, flying around. There was, you know, dogs barking, sirens, but there was absolutely nothing in the sky. So, you know, I went back down inside. Everyone thought it was me. They're like, oh, real funny, you know, break the speakers again. I'm like, I swear on my soul, that was not me. I did not do this. It was just completely unexplainable. It was actually pretty terrifying because when you're faced with something that doesn't make sense and there is absolutely no logical technological reason that you can identify, it can be very disconcerting and kind of scary. You know, it never happened again. I don't know what it was. I don't know if a listener out there has any insights, but they were tannoys. This back in 1999, tannoy internally amplified. If somebody has some information, like they've heard of something like this happening before, I would love to know, because I've done research online and I can't find anything. Nothing that specific. It was a subsonic bass frequency. There was dust coming down. It was pretty intense. So yeah, that's my first story, or account, I should say. So my second account, this one is much more personal, and it's of a paranormal nature. It is very difficult to describe and explain, but I'll try. So in around 2005 or 2006, I was in a town called Old Wick, New Jersey. This is where my grandparents live. This is where I kind of grew up. And during this time, it's a very old kind of spooky town. It's got graveyards, a lot of graveyards. The graves, you know, for American standards, I know in the UK, old is, you guys laugh at what we consider old. But here, you know, 1800s, 1700s is old for us. And the energy in this town is spooky for sure at night. But I had never, you know, growing up, I had never experienced anything that abnormal. I was in my 20s, I believe, at the time. And my girlfriend and I at the time, now wife, she and I were, you know, it's maybe 11 at night. And I'm like, well, let's go for a walk. We'll go, you know, summertime. It was beautiful out. I believe there was a full moon or a near full moon. And there was a specific graveyard that I absolutely love visiting. It's one of my favorite places that I have been to many times. I've explored that graveyard many, many times. And this is, you know, not unusual. I'd never had any experience in that graveyard that was abnormal. So we were walking out of town, and it's, you know, maybe a half mile walk, and it is still beautiful, and got to the graveyard. And the graveyard is situated in a way that the road that passes through the graveyard is shaped like a U. So there's an entrance. You go around down to the back, and then you come back out. And, you know, it's just, we're going to walk around the road and come back out. So we were walking in the road, and we're in the graveyard, and beautiful night, and we get down to the back of the U, and it kind of goes down a hill back there. It's a little isolated. It's probably the spookiest place of the graveyard. And now we're headed back out towards the exit. And as we're walking out towards the exit, we pass under this tree. And it is a pine tree, I think, some sort of coniferous tree. And out of nowhere, as we're walking under it, this intense, intense feeling of dread and sorrow and rage and pain just flooded over me. And I looked over at my wife and I'm like, do you feel that? And she's like, let's just get out of here. And like tears are coming down her face, and we just start running. We just start sprinting, and we get all the way to the end of the road. And we're now at the road, the entranceway to the graveyard. And I look at her and I'm like, what was that? And she's like, I don't know, but I just want to go home. Let's just get out of here. And I'm like, I can't. I have to know more. This kind of stuff doesn't happen to me. I'm not lucky with the UFOs and paranormal experiences, and I'm not going to let this one go. Something's going on and I need to know more. So I turn around. She's like, I'm not going. I'm staying here. And so she's like, I'm going to stay on the road. You go ahead. And I'm like, I'm going to go. And so, you know, I think I had a cell phone light. This is back in 2006. I had some sort of small light. And I think it was on my cell phone. And so it might have been the screen that was emanating the light. So I start walking back. And I'm looking at the tree. And I'm feeling something, but it's not super intense. And as I'm getting closer and closer to the tree, my eyes start watering more and more. I'm like, is there like a gas leak? Is there something like physical going on? Because I was, you know, in the Rocky Mountain skeptics as a kid. I believe in science, and this is an unexplained phenomenon. And I don't smell anything. I don't feel anything until I get under the tree again. And at that moment, there was an overpowering sense of anger and rage, like there was a fight. So the shape of this tree literally was shaped kind of like a man. It had a central core, two large branches on either side that were reaching over the road of the graveyard. And it looked like the tree had fingertips touching the graves on the other side of the road. I'm like, this is absolutely bizarre. So I start looking at the tree closer, and it's growing out of a little super old grave. And I'm like, this has got to be it. And as I'm getting closer to the grave, I'm like, I'm going to find out the name. As I start to try to read this grave, I didn't hear voices, but this feeling was like, you're not wanted here. This is not your problem. This is not your business. Get out. this is personal. This is like, it felt like a family feud. Like I had walked into a room where there was a family having this giant blowout and I wasn't supposed to be there. Just get out of the room. This is none of your business. And I'm like, no, you made it my business. Like I'm saying in my head, I'm like, no, you made it my business when whatever happened happened. And now I need to know more. And it felt like kind of like the eye of Sauron in Lord of the Rings, like turned its gaze at me. And I just felt this like, you need to go, like, get out of here. And I'm like, no. And so I get closer to the grave, closer to the grave, closer. And my eyes are tearing and watering. And I'm trying desperately to read it. And it says, Robert Martin, probably just angered whatever it was right now by saying this. And it was M-A-R-T-A-N, pretty sure. And it was this overwhelming power, like, well, now you're the target. Like, now I'm mad at you. And not only am I mad at these people, but I'm mad at you too now. And I start to step back. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. And I could hear Nicole like, come on, what are you doing? I'm like, just a minute longer. And as I'm backing away, I could see a bunch of other little graves behind the tree. And I walk around to the backside of the tree and there's all these baby graves. There was like maybe 6 to 8 little tiny headstones, no bigger than like eight inches tall. And some of them had little dates. It was like, you know, one would say like little Mary, or another one was like 18, they were like number 2, 1870 or something. And it looked to me and it felt to me like this person was part of a family, because the graves on the other side of the road that the tree was touching were expensive ones. They're really tall monuments and they were big and it was all one family. And I want to say Van Sickle. I wish I could remember. This is what really irritates me, is like I tried so hard to imprint all these names in my head so I could go back and do research. And for the life of me, I can't remember them specifically. And it drives me crazy because I haven't been back in a long time. And so I'm looking at the baby graves. I'm like, okay, this is just really creepy. The energy was dark. It was angry. It was scary. And it was very powerful. And it felt external, like there was something wrong. And so I'm looking at these baby graves. I'm like, all right, this is enough. I'm out of here. And so I turn around and I run back. And Nicole is still very upset. And she's like, I don't know what's going on. And so we're walking back to the house. And I'm like, what do you think that was? And she's like, I don't know. I don't want to think about it anymore. I don't want to know. And I just can't get it out of my head. And it felt like after I had looked at this thing, after I was there, that it was like attached to me. Like it had become part of me, like that I had invaded its space. And now it, I don't want to say wanted revenge, but it was almost like I passed my hand through black goo and now my hand was dirty. And there was like, I couldn't get it off. And so I get home and I'm laying in bed at my grandmother's house and I'm having nightmares and I'm having a hard time sleeping. And I kept feeling this really weird feeling like that there was a fight, that there was something wrong and I could not shake it. And, you know, the next morning we wake up and I could still feel it. And I'm like, we got to go back to the graveyard. I got to get more info. I need to take some pictures. I need to know more about this tree. I got to figure out where these graves are, what's this family. And she's like, you can go. I'm staying here. I'm like, fine. So I go by myself and I walk back down there, I get to the tree and the feeling was gone. Like I still felt like I was dirty. Like there, like I had been affected by whatever happened, but the intensity was gone. There was no more fight. It was as if the fight had ended, or as if the doorway that allowed this experience to happen had closed. So I'm like, well, great. Now I can really like take my time and look at this, because it felt like I was trying to push me out. This time that it wasn't happening. So the backside of the tree that had the baby graves was dead, and it had this sick, sappy, it looked like it was diseased on the side that the baby graves were on. But the front side where the tree was growing out and reaching over was like, you know, it was just sticking out a little bit. The grave was like kind of tall. It was like knee high. And, you know, I just looking at it and it had a trunk coming out where the face would be, almost like a chin. And it sounds ridiculous, but it really did have kind of a humanoid shape. And so, you know, I essentially was like, I'm going to write all this down. I'm going to do my research and I'm going to go back. And so I left. I tried to do internet research, couldn't find out, couldn't remember the names. I think it said Robert Martin. I think the family was Van Sickle. But I honestly feel like there's like a mental block, like it was blocked for me. And so I can't really do much research on it. And then I've been checking Google Earth, like looking at it with Google Earth, and the tree's gone. It died. Apparently whatever disease it had finally killed it. But you can still see the baby graves. I sent you some pictures that you can look at. I mean, they're not that detailed, but you know, satellite images, a picture of the tree from the road. yeah, so that's really it. I didn't see anything. I didn't get to see an apparition or nothing like that. It was just a very, very terrifying, once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience that I have yet to. There's nothing that has compared to it, really, in that sense.
Sounds like you definitely walked into something there.
It felt like that. It felt like I walked into something. It was like I walked into a room of a private, personal thing that I wasn't welcome, and that I angered it by going, because it felt like it was one entity fighting either itself or somebody else. It felt like, basically, this is what I gather, and from now just kind of piecing it together, it seemed like there was a rich family. Somebody got kicked out, and they were left with the responsibility of some children that died. And that person never forgave the family, and it just festered and grew. And I don't know if it was an anniversary or if it was, because I've been through that graveyard a million times and never did this happen. I'd never known anything like this to happen there, then or since. It's very strange. Very, very strange. So yeah, it's good to tell this. I don't think I've ever really told anyone this. Wow.
Telepath is a weekly digital newsletter filled with the latest paranormal news, trending topics, and fresh articles from some of the most popular critical thinkers in the community today. Stay informed on your favorite paranormal podcasts and live streaming talk shows. Interact with the Telepath and upload your paranormal story or pics. It could be featured in an upcoming edition. Sign up right now for the free Telepath newsletter at paranormal.radio. That's paranormal.radio.
And now I'm moving on to my final account. This one is much shorter, not nearly as that interesting. So this takes place in Chicago, 2006. And I lived on Lake Street and Halstead, basically, which was right by this big highway, train tracks, big loft, crazy place. We had really crazy parties. Of course, I still had the big speakers and the DJ stuff, producing music. All that was still happening, still do to this day. Yeah, so I lived in the upper northwest corner of the building, and it was at the very top. It was a three-story, but these are tall stories. There, each one was probably 20 feet high. They're really high ceilings, really big spaces. And my little room was tucked up in the back corner above my little music studio. No, sorry, my music studio was above my little space, but it's all back in the corner. And I had a dream where I was in bed. I was just laying there. A light came through the window. And I had experienced sleep paralysis. Now, I've had sleep paralysis in my life before, which is intense and quite scary. But this was different. It felt like somebody was coming. And I was, you know, I couldn't open my eyes. I felt like I was in a dream. I finally opened my eyes, and in my face was your straight up standard gray. And I mean, it was like 2 inches from my face. I saw these two giant black eyes right in my face. And it felt like it was trying to hold me down. And I felt like, for the first time of all my sleep paralysis experiences, I actually felt a sense of calm and strength. And I started to sit up a little bit. And I don't want to say it was surprised, but because it didn't feel surprised. It felt ambivalent. I didn't feel goodness. I didn't feel evil. I didn't feel really anything other than this thing was right in my face trying to hold me down. And I started to sit up, and I felt confident, which was weird because I've had sleep paralysis dreams in the past where I did not feel confident. I felt scared, and I felt this confidence and this calm. And I was like, you are not going to get me this time, I think is what I said. And I started to reach out. And as I started to reach out, it fell like a rag doll, as if the strings had been cut, and it just tumbled to the ground. And there were two others in the room that tumbled to the ground. And I woke up, and my hand was not outreached like it was in my dream. And I was just sitting there in bed, and it was daylight. This happened at night, but at least in my dream. And I didn't think that much of it. I'm like, yeah, it's just a weird dream, right? So who cares? So I go to school. I was in college at the time, university. And I was telling my schoolmates, you know, what had happened. And, you know, some of them were like, oh, well, that's just, you know, one guy was like, oh, well, you know, people have these memories of traumatic childbirth and there's, you know, these, this, that, and the other. And I'm like, all right, whatever. And so I didn't think much of it. Weird dream. So what? I get back home after school and my downstairs roommate, neighbor, Carson, is hanging out. I'm like, Carson, I had this crazy dream. And he turns pale white and he's like, I had the same dream last night. And I'm like, come on. And he's like, no, I swear to God. And he was petrified. And Carson's a big, kind of stoic dude. It's rare to see him emotional like that, especially in that way. I'm like, well, describe it to me. And honestly, I had kind of forgotten about what he described. So I reached out to him recently because I knew I was coming on the show. And I was like, I want to get his story. I'm like, so I reached out to Carson. I was like, Carson, what was your dream that night? He's like, I was in my room. And he said there were three tall, dark gray aliens, darker color. Now, this is interesting because in my dream, they were shorter, but they were not necessarily, they were like beige. Like their color was almost like, for me, the color was like a brownish, not like human brownish. It was like a, I want to say like a darker beige. It didn't. And he said they were tall and like brown, but like dark, like a dark brown, whereas mine were not. They were like a lighter color. And he said that he was able to reach up and almost touch one. And when he almost touched one, they disappeared. And it was, that is when we both kind of freaked out because I didn't think a lot of it. I was like, oh, I had a weird dream. And the similarities in our dreams that we both experienced sleep paralysis, we were both able to break out of it in a sense and almost touch them. And then his just disappeared. He just woke up. Mine fell to the ground. Mine tumbled. That was like basically, and his were tall, mine were short. And those are basically the differences in our dreams. So they weren't identical dreams, but we both dreamed about, you know, extraterrestrial visitors. And it was very strange because I've never had an extraterrestrial dream as far as I know. I haven't had sleep paralysis, I don't think, since. Honestly, it's been a long, 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 long time. It seemed to happen more frequently when I was younger. So yeah, those are the accounts. Those are the stories that I have to relay. And it feels good to tell them. It's been a long time and I don't talk about this stuff to anyone. So thank you.
Wow. You know, there was, to have a dream like that is unusual, you know, especially a shared dream as well.
Well, you know, I didn't see Carson in my dream, but what's interesting is Carson's room is directly below mine, was directly below mine. So our beds were situated in the exact same position. He was on the second floor, I was on the third floor. We were in the corner, which is kind of the most isolated part of the building because there were no other buildings around our building. Like outside my window was a highway to one direction, and then the back direction was some train tracks and a little alleyway and other buildings. So yeah, it's very strange. And when I look at Chicago from the sky, like I do Google Maps and stuff, it is kind of an interesting spot because it's kind of a nexus point of a lot of different roads and trains. And it's kind of like, looks like a little, it looked like if I was an alien and I was going to come down and look, like check people out, I mean, I might pick that spot because it looks like kind of the center of the action. However, it really wasn't. It was kind of like a desolate area once you're there. But yeah, very strange. I've never had a shared dream experience before or after. I haven't dreamed about extraterrestrials. I'm not even sure they were extraterrestrials. Honestly, I don't know what it was. I can't say for sure that I know what it was. I didn't see a ship. I'm not even convinced grays are extraterrestrials, to be honest. I have theories on that, but
even if it wasn't a dream, it was definitely a shared experience.
Yep. And Carson is not the type of guy to express fear or even that kind of stuff. Like he's a private person. He probably wouldn't be happy. I told him I was doing the show and I asked him if he wanted to, I was like, do you want to like contribute anything or maybe join me for a minute? He's like, no, I don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm like, well, I'm going to use your name. So there you go. So yeah, those are my stories. I have a feeling or a theory that grays are actually from the future. I feel like they're actually time travelers. This is just a theory. I don't have anything to base this on other than some personal things, so that they are actually, I believe, this is just what I believe, I don't know, that they are actually semi-autonomous AIs sent back in time to gather DNA to bring back to the future so that there is a stronger gene sampling for whatever toxic damage has been done in the future. I think that in the far future, that DNA will be so wrecked by, I don't know what, either radiation or something, that there will be extreme measures taken. That's just my personal opinion. I don't know.
It's an interesting one. I mean, a lot of people do believe that they are half and half, whether biological, mechanical.
Yes, that's the impression that I got from at least my dream, was that it wasn't necessarily alive, that it might have been either remotely controlled by something that was alive, or it was super advanced AI. Honestly, I didn't get the impression that it was alive, but I don't know. That's why I love your show. I love listening and trying to see if I can find people's experiences that correspond to what I've experienced. Like, do they feel the same way? Some people are, wow, they're so benevolent, I felt nothing but love. And then others are like, oh, they're like hostile, they've come to aggressively take my DNA. Like, the stories are so widely divergent, and it's interesting to try and find the little bits and pieces that actually do correlate. And that's one of the joys of your show. I'm so grateful that you're doing it.
People have lots of different experiences that are different from other people, emotion-wise.
Just like Carson and I's dreams were different. I mean, we both experienced something very similar, but they were also different. And maybe that's based on who we are.
Exactly. A lot like art, you know, art being subjective.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting, for sure. I look forward to learning more. I feel like some things are starting to come to the surface a little bit. You know, I'm often reminded, when I think about my experience, I'm reminded of those kids in South Africa who saw the UFO and the being that was standing on top.
Oh, the Ariel school, yeah.
Yeah, that account really, you know, I heard about that actually later after my experience, and I was like, wow, that, for some reason, that really resonates. There's something to that story, because those kids, they all tell a very similar striking story, and they were too young to be, I feel like they were too young to be coached to tell that story. There's something to it. I don't know what it is. I'd love to know more. I do think that there's more going on than we're aware of. And I think that there are levels to this that are much deeper than just, oh, they're beings from another star that came here. I think that there's stuff. I think there's something interdimensional about it. I think there's also something paranormal about it. I think it's very interesting that some people have a lot more experiences than others. I think it has something to do with maybe brain chemistry or DNA. I wonder if the people that are having their DNA harvested, if my theory or my thoughts are even somewhat correct, the people that are coming back and getting their DNA harvested are the direct descendants of the people that are alive in the future, right? So if they need a specific DNA sequence, that's why the same people keep getting harassed, and that's why it follows family lines, because that particular DNA sequence is important to a specific lineage in the future. So I wonder that if that's the case, and that's why certain people have a lot more experiences than others.
But it could be possible. It could be very much be possible.
It could. And it's interesting that in theoretical physics, and that there are recent discoveries about, you know, the possibilities of time travel, the you know, it seems like we're getting tantalizingly close to some very interesting physics breakthroughs, that it would not surprise me that even if in like 100 or 200 years we were able to, you know, transcend our physical reality in ways that we didn't previously think was possible.
So everything is possible. Everything Absolutely. Is possible.
With the evolution of, you know, cryptocurrency and, you know, Neuralink, and just there's so much stuff that's happening right now to be excited about. I think that this is a really exciting time to be alive, and that there's a lot of potential for good to take place. I know it seems bleak at times, but I do believe that there will be a renaissance of sorts that is almost inevitable. You know, barring, of course, ecological catastrophe, which is probably also inevitable. I think it's a balancing act, but it's a very special time to be alive. And I'm personally honored and privileged to be here when I am.
I feel a lot of people feel the same way as well. I think we're definitely on a crossover. There's a lot of change going on at the minute.
Right. It very much so. And I'm curious about these, you know, new revelations like the Tic Tac UFO and all these interesting little disclosures. I mean, who would have thought that the Pentagon would be, yeah, you know, disclosing that there are actually, you know, unidentified aerial phenomenon that we don't know what it is or where it came from, whether it's a big psyop or whatnot, I don't know. But it is interesting. I mean, 2 years ago, if someone had said, oh, the Pentagon's going to release UFOs, I would have been like, yeah, right. But they did. Although I guess it was 2 years, more than 2 years ago. And it was, you know what I mean. And it's a very, very interesting time to be alive.
The way I kind of feel is whatever information really comes out, we've always got a view of quite a bit of skepticism, because they tend to tell you stuff that they want you to know. It's never really for your benefit.
Right. Unless it gets leaked, you know, maybe it gets leaked accidentally, and then they've got to play, you know, they've got to play catch up. I'm very interested in Commander David Fravor's interview that I've seen him do on various podcasts. He seems like a pretty credible guy. I find that pilots are pretty credible. You know, they've got a lot on the line. Their intellect and their vision are important pieces of what they do for a living, and throwing those into question can cause, you know, irreparable damage to their reputations. So I find that when people like that get up and talk about their experiences, I think we should listen. You know, like you said, take it with a grain of salt, you know, question everything. But at the same time, keep an open mind. You know, I don't know what Commander Fravor saw. I don't know if anybody does. He certainly doesn't.
There is a term for pilots that ever they try and speak out about this kind of thing, they're told that, you know, if you continue to do this, then you'll be flying a desk.
Right. Right. Well, that happened to those Korea Air guys. I think it was in the 80s. You know, there was a famous case where it was either Korean or Japanese pilots, you know,
saw Japan, that was a Japanese pilot.
Right. And they reported it, and his life was never the same. He flew a desk. And I think that he was made an example of. And from that moment on, people were like, nope, I'm not going to do it. So when they do speak up, I think it's important.
And they will. And they will slowly, they will start coming.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do think. Get contacted quite a few pilots, not always military, but generally civilian. And it's very difficult to get a civilian pilot on, especially if he's still flying for an airline. That's great, James.
It's great to be on your show. It's a real honor. And I'm really grateful that what you're doing is being received. And I love the way you do it. And it's a real honor to be here on the show, for sure.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing those.
Well, thank you. I hope somebody finds it interesting. And if anybody has any, you know, info on how speakers could do that, not being turned on, I'd be interested to know for sure.
We do have a lot of very tech-minded listeners, so there might be someone out there that is listening to this right now and might have an answer for you.
Well, that'd be, if they happen to send you one, let me know. Remember, these are internally amplified. They did not have long speaker wires going to an amplifier, and none of that was turned on. That's a big factor, because if there was an external amp with the wires and it was all turned on, that would make more sense, because then it's kind of like an antenna. It's receiving signals. It's possible, if it's not grounded right, that you'll get stuff. But with internal amplification, with everything turned off, it just... I don't see how. I don't see how. But, you know, who knows? Maybe there's a logical explanation that I'm missing. I'd like to know.
That's great, James. I'll talk to you soon. All right.
All right. Thank you, Nick.
That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you've had an encounter you would like to share, email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or hit me up via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. Special thanks to Evie and James for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe, my friends, and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.